You're listening to Adopter Stories by the Adoption and Fostering Podcast. In this episode, Rosie shares her story of supporting her mother and husband as they adopted three siblings.
My experience of adoption started when my mother remarried. She adopted three children with her new husband. So I have three birth siblings and I have three adopted siblings. And I'm the second eldest of the seven of us. You know, I didn't really have any experience of adoption. I didn't know what to expect, but I knew that she was going through the process. And I can remember going over when they had been approved at panel. And we all had champagne in the garden. And at that stage, life was busy. I wasn't living at home. But, you know, I think the youngest of my brothers was about 11 or 12. So they had passed the point where they had very little children in the house. And they asked me to be their referee, which I was really happy to do. And then the next thing that I remember is that they were matched about 17 years ago. So when they were matched, they were matched with a sibling group of two, where the youngest child, they'd been another baby born essentially. So there were two that were up for adoption, and there was another baby where the future was uncertain. So I know that they felt quite strongly about keeping siblings together. And at the time that they were matched, my brother was about 2.5. And then the next one down, 14 months. So when they came to us, there was a 1-year-old and a 2.5-year-old. And they'd come from a really difficult background. There was a lot of difficult information for my mum and her husband to kind of process at the time that they were matched, Betty and Bear. So really quite chronic neglect that these children had suffered over a long period of time. That's quite difficult to explain to someone that hasn't come across chronic neglect or dysfunctional families to that extent before. You know, I look back and I think how naive we all were, actually. A really difficult background. The introductions went quite well. The two eldest children, one girl and one boy, there was about a year between them, and their foster carers were really great. My mum and her husband went and stayed up in the area where the foster carers lived for a week, I think. And I think the introductions period was around 10 days. I wasn't party to that introductions period. We were on the phone a lot. And then obviously I got to meet the children when they came down and they had their first night, you know, when they officially moved. I can remember that the younger one, she was not really used to cuddles. And the way that the foster carer had managed to get her to sleep every night was by bouncing her in a baby bouncer and then carrying her asleep upstairs to a cot. And that was really strange, actually, watching my mum and her husband having to do things where instinctively you want to connect, you want to have physical contact, but you have to respect that actually the child cannot tolerate that. And that was one of the first things that really struck me, as this is really different. This is not what we know, and we're learning as we go, it can be quite scary, really. When I say we, I often refer to my mum, her husband, and me. I wasn't living with them when the kids arrived, but I had a house of my own down the road, and I didn't have children of my own at that point. So I used to finish work and go straight over, tea time, bath time, do the bedtime routine, And sometimes we'd split it. So I'd read one a story, she'd read another story. And it was great. It was what I needed as well, because one of my siblings, so the middle of the three, she was born in 2000. And at that time, when I was 19, I had my first baby, but she was stillborn. So at the point when my mum adopted, I was then helping her to look after not just three beautiful little children, but one of them was the same age that my daughter would have been. So I had these empty arms where I needed to really nurture somebody, and she adopted. So it was kind of a lovely serendipity that she needed me and I needed her and they needed all of us. So I spent a lot of time with the kids. You know, the first two, when they came, I can remember my stepdad talking later. I can remember him saying, I really don't think that we understood what we were taking on. And by that, he was referring to these rages that the children used to have, whereby they obviously couldn't express themselves and they were grieving for their foster carers and they were grieving for their birth family, and they'd experienced a huge amount of neglect and change, and they would become so rageful that they couldn't talk, and they were at risk of hurting themselves and other people. So totally dysregulated. And sometimes the only thing we could do would be to hold them, to keep themselves safe until they calmed down. And I think unless you've seen something like that, unless you've seen a child totally dysregulated that needs to be contained, it's really shocking and it's hard to explain, you know, just with words. So children arrive and things are okay, even enjoyable most of the time. And then as the trust grows, the difficulties emerge whereby they are able to show what their needs are through their behaviour. And what I now know is that children's behaviour is their language. They can't always express it through words, but if there's an unmet need, it will come out in their behaviour, whether that's challenging or not. So it was a baptism of fire for them. My mum was a really experienced parent. She'd raised four children. My youngest two brothers were still living at home at this point. So there were two older children and then the two adopted children, and then my mum and her husband. So there were six of them in the house with me going over daily. I guess they had taken on board this would be a different experience. But sometimes you don't know what the issues are with the children until you kind of in the thick of it. So as they got older, what we found was there were some behavioural things that they never really let go of or that never dissipated. You know, the kind of things that I remember are the way that they responded to toys. So your expectations as an adult, when you give a child a toy that you think that they will like, everything, all of that has to change, because these children, they have a history and it doesn't go away. So, you know, the way that they respond to their environment, the way that they respond to birthdays, the way that they respond to Christmases, parties, busy family dinners, is totally different to anything that you've seen before. So we all learned as we went along, really. And looking back, I think the desire to keep the three youngest siblings together was really strong in my mum and her husband. So the first two arrived aged 2.5 and 1. And then a year later, they had their one-year-old baby sister placed with them. And I was unaware of it at the time, but they had to fight quite hard for that to be allowed. And looking back, I think that was probably because the social workers weren't sure what the emerging needs of the children would be and whether or not that would be too much, all three of them together. And I was more part of that introductions process. I can remember I met my now husband. I just met him and we got quite close. So he came up to the area where the foster carers lived and we stayed. We stayed in a like a rented property for a week with my mum and her husband and the two younger kids. And it was quite strange going into the foster carer's house for the first time. I remember that when we met her, she was quite, you know, she'd probably 60s. I remember her going into the back bedroom to get the baby. And what I now know is that she was looking after four babies at the point where we had those actions. And I never saw any of the other babies. So, you know, as an adult now, as a parent now, and someone that works in this field, I do question that a lot. Like, where were the other babies and were they all quite separated from what was going on in the main house and why was that? Anyway, she seemed to get on well with the other children initially, but really you're only looking at really tiny opportunities to make those observations and those judgments. And with adopted children, it's quite common that they experience change and really would struggle more than maybe if you'd had a birth child of your own. So the older two of these three, they were experiencing change by virtue of being up there for introductions. And maybe that's why me and my husband were there, because we needed to hold things together for them. Yeah, it was lovely when the youngest one came. It felt like things were complete. It felt like that was the right thing to do. Slowly, things started to emerge whereby the relationships between the three children were naturally competitive. Looking back, I can see that there were so many challenges in place for all of these children, but especially the younger one. And I think at the time, people felt like, actually, she was born and went straight to foster care, so it will be all right for her. And with hindsight, I feel like that was naive. A lot of the strategies that my parents used, they went on therapeutic parenting courses. They asked the local authority for help many, many times over the years. Sometimes they had some help, sometimes they didn't. I don't feel like there was anything they could tap into locally with regards to other therapeutic parents in the area. So it's quite isolating, really. And what we saw was that as the children started school and the more challenges emerged, you know, difficulties making friends, the eldest in particular, sitting at a desk, concentrating on a task for more than a few minutes, that was really, really challenging for him. And he soon developed a reputation for being quite naughty, which is not really a word I like to use as a parent, but I think that's how the teachers viewed him. The middle one, she had problems with toileting, and you would expect some level of developmental delay for any child that's adopted. There comes a point where you realise actually they're not catching up, or they're not doing this thing that we expect of them, even though they've had, you know, the time is going by. So in the end, she was diagnosed with faecal incontinence. I can remember my mum and husband getting more and more exacerbated by the lack of support or the lack of seemingly understanding from the local authority. And they got involvement with CAMHS, with all three in the end, but it was a bit of a challenge, like trying to get people to listen and explain again and again and again why these children needed more help. I can remember being in a meeting with one of the social workers. It was something to do with post-adoption support or psychological input. I wanted my presence to just for my mum's moral support, not really to actually take part in meetings, but just to be there for her. And I can remember listening to one of the social workers and thinking, I could do your job so much better than you're doing your job. And I know that part of that was me feeling protective over her and over the children, who by this point, you know, there was no question about whether or not they were our family. They were our children. and they were my siblings, and they still are. But it's been a really rocky road. All of the children have had various diagnoses over the years. I think, you know, what's really important to say is that all of the children have come back into foster care, but that they are still our family. So a professional might tell you that we've experienced a placement breakdown for all three of the children, and you might call it that, but actually we just couldn't keep them safe from themselves, or we couldn't keep ourselves safe from them any longer. There was a lot of child-to-parent violence, which I think I was protected from because I wasn't living in the house. And I think my mother wanted to protect me from what she was going through to a certain extent, despite me being an adult. But I can remember seeing bruises on her arms and asking what they were, and actually being quite surprised that, you know, it was my little brother who'd been hurting her. What I later learned was that the children would wait until she was in the house by herself before any of the violent outbursts escalated. So quite often it would be manageable whilst both parents were in the house, but if she was on her own, that was challenging. So it meant her safety was at risk. And in the end, it was only safety being prioritised that meant the kids came back into care. It didn't happen all at once. So the eldest one, my brother, he came back into foster care first, following an incident where he'd trashed the house in a violent outburst. And that wasn't unusual for him. He would often have violent outbursts. But I think the safety of others around him was threatened so greatly that the decision was kind of made for my mum and her husband, and the police were called. That was really hard. At that point, I didn't understand that you can have a placement breakdown and still remain family. But he ended up going into a series of foster placements, and we did maintain contact, direct contact with him. So I would go and visit him at his foster carers and take him out for the day, and my mum and her husband would have contact with him separately. The second placement breakdown that occurred was actually my younger sister. I'm going to refer to him as he, because he's trans, so he arrived as she, but he's a he now. Again, it was a violent outburst. There was a threat made with a knife. His mental health had obviously deteriorated so greatly, and the safety became the paramount thing for everybody. So what can I say? It felt like our world was falling apart. And at this point, I had a family of my own too now. That was really hard, having to prioritise my own children and my own work, and then supporting mum third, if you like. And then the middle one, my sister, she was last to go back into foster care. She went back in about 3 years ago. The children are now 17, 18, and 19. That's kind of where we're up to. Two of them are adults, and one of them's on the verge of being an adult. In the end, I went to university and I did a social work degree because I knew that I wanted to, this is the only thing I wanted to do. I just became so passionate about it. You know, I can remember so clearly, there was a social worker, an agency social worker, who came to my mum's house with a box of files and said, "I'm leaving the team. Here's some information. You know, I need to drop it off to someone." And there was information in there that they shouldn't have had. There was addresses of the birth family. There was other identifying information that really they shouldn't have been put in that position. And that really drove me to go and study and to try and be a good social worker, really. Usually social workers qualify and then they're encouraged to maybe do their stint in child protection or family work before then specialising later, or reaching burnout, whichever comes first. And and in the end, you know, I did my degree and I felt like, no, I only want to do adoption. This is the only thing, you know, that has driven me to do this degree. And so for my final year placement, I arranged to have 100 days in my local adoption team. And it meant that by the time I qualified, I'd already done a home study assessment. I'd taken someone to panel. I dipped my toe in the water and tried these different things. So I was able to go straight into adoption, and I've been doing that for 11 years now. So when I'm thinking about whether our three children should have remained together, in my mind, I feel like maybe they shouldn't have. But saying that, they do love each other so much that when you see them together, especially the younger two, you can't help but question yourself, you know? It's, who knows? It has made me more cautious as a worker when I'm doing matching, and it has made me really cautious as a parent as well, actually. You know, I'm always keep a really close eye on everything that's going on. Supervision is really important to me, and I guess I'm just more wary as a practitioner. A lot of people are driven to keep families together, and that's only right. But I tend to throw in that, yes, but what if, you know, quite, that feels natural to me because of my lived experience and because of the experience of my mother. Well, I'm definitely an adoptive sibling first. I think BAF would call me a sibling who adopted. I think that's the way that they term it. And I am an adoption social worker, but that comes after, I think. So one of the main ways that I supported my mum as the children were growing older was, you know, I would look after them one at a time, and that would dissipate the pressure at home. But I also took over responsibility for the letterbox contact with birth family. I think my mum and her husband felt that letterbox was really important, and that's why they maintained it. So there are many, many letters and photographs going back over the years. And at the point where the behaviour of the children became really, really challenging, I offered to take it over so that it wouldn't just stop. So every 6 months, we'd write a letter in response to one that we'd had from birth mother. She would send pictures. When the children got a bit older, kind of 7, 8, 9, we would show them the letters from birth mother, and they would be invited to contribute towards our reply. So they would come over to my house one at a time. I'd read the letter and we'd talk about it. They would tell me if they had any questions, or they would talk and I would type. Sometimes they would draw a picture and I would put that in as well. I think when people are first approved, letterbox contact or indirect contact is something that people kind of nod along with, they agree to it, and they don't necessarily understand what an emotional task it can be. So that was lovely to be able to help out in that way. And since that time, you know, the children have gone on to have some contact with birth family. And although we've had to manage it quite carefully, having a good letterbox history means that all of that can be, you can support them better in finally making contact with birth family, because there is already an existing link. what it means for the future. I don't know in terms of whether or not letterbox contact will still continue in adoption, because, you know, the internet is out there. but that's another conversation altogether. So I just think it's really important that children are supported to have contact with their birth family, and also to be safeguarded by their adoptive parents. And that's not always an easy balance. My experience has been challenging because it's hard to watch your mum and her husband, you know, your loved ones, go through something and not be able to make it better. It's quite a strong desire in me to help those that I love and to make things better. And although I did the best I could by being there for moral support, it was a situation which was actually never going to improve, because the number of children outweighing the number of adults parenting them, you know, it's quite simple that their needs grew and grew and grew. And in the end, it was quite, you know, we would have to separate them. They couldn't play unsupervised. They would hurt each other, or it would get out of hand very, very quickly. That was really challenging for me. Saying that, I don't think I would ever wish that it was different, because it gave me so much being able to be involved in their upbringing. You know, I wouldn't be without them in my life, despite some really difficult things that have happened.